Hi, welcome everyone to the latest episode of APIs Unplugged. My name is Matt McClarty. I'm the global leader of API strategy for MuleSoft. And I'm delighted, as always, to be co-hosting with Mike Amundson. Mike, what's up?
Hey, how you doing, Matt?
I'm good. I'm actually here live today from Studio C, which is my older son's bedroom, teenager.
Very good.
No AC, got a ceiling fan going, so you may hear me struggling a bit today. But anyway, it's great to be here. Today, you know, we've got a really interesting topic space. I think of the growth of interest around APIs is in the business space and looking at how APIs can support digital strategies. And so we're really happy to be joined today by our special guest, David Timby, who is an API business lead and was recently with StubHub. David, welcome to APIs Unplugged.
Matt, Mike, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here. Looking forward to our conversation.
Awesome. So why don't we, for the benefit of our listeners, because you know we've had some great episodes with people from all over the spectrum of APIs, and I think that we're seeing more and more backgrounds and roles and perspectives coming into the API community. We'd love to hear, you know, what's your background in industry and especially as it relates to APIs?
Yeah, thanks. I mean, my background in APIs is in the context of the live event ticketing industry. So I spent 5 years in various roles at StubHub. I like to say that I didn't really know that I was in the API industry until I was actually in the API industry. I mean, that just shows how dependent the live ticketing event industry is on APIs. But in my time at StubHub, you know, I've spent some time in business operations for our North America business unit, driving strategic initiatives. I spent some time in our C2C business unit, improving and driving consumer supply. And then most recently, and I think this is the most applicable experience that I had, is in B2B operations. You know, I worked on integrating a point of sale system that StubHub purchased in 2016, and worked on bringing some of our largest enterprise customers onto that system. And then, you know, most recently was the business lead for StubHub's API program, which worked with the ecosystem of developers and software service providers to the industry.
Yeah, so I mean, I find this really fascinating space, and I'm really glad we're getting a chance to talk, because I think people, they know what StubHub is. They know other sort of related things like Expedia or Kayak or other, you know, competitors in your own space. And this idea of sort of B2B and business management, I think people normally think of sort of the user, business to user connection, or business to, you know, to customer. But I mean, your area really runs off this notion of business to business. And I find that sort of fascinating. How did you even get involved in setting up like this API, and what are the challenges? And what's it experience like when you're really looking at sort of the back office or the back end of what somebody like StubHub does?
Yeah, I mean, good question. So, I mean, StubHub's API program has been around for quite some time. I mean, in 2007, StubHub did an integration and partnership deal where we became the official secondary marketplace of Major League Baseball. That was 2007. So, you know, that was a full-on integration that was really high touch, that allowed season ticket holders to list tickets, price tickets, process sales from their season ticket holder account directly on StubHub. And that was all powered by APIs. So I was kind of late to the party when it came to getting involved in StubHub's API business. I really got involved in 2016, around that time when, like I said, StubHub purchased a point of sale system called Ticket Utils. You know, it was kind of off the shelf software designed to help professional ticket brokers manage their business, kind of inventory management, process sales, keep records of their accounting work. And kind of the catalyst for me getting involved is I had a deep background in enterprise software, sales, account management, and marketing. So it was kind of a natural fit for me to be a part of that. And my job was to basically outreach to our largest professional ticket brokers and try to get them on to our software. You know, what was really interesting is like that was probably one of the most challenging jobs that I ever had at StubHub or in general. I don't know if some of the audience may or may not know about professional ticket brokers, but I mean, these are very like highly complex businesses, multi-million dollar tech enabled omni-channel supply and distribution companies. And kind of what we were asking them to do is kind of move their entire operations from systems they had set up over the years onto this kind of new POS system that we purchased. And you know, one of the unique components of the POS system that we purchased was it had a kind of built-in distribution mechanism that you know a seller on the platform could then list tickets on not just one marketplace but multiple marketplaces at the same time, and that was all powered by APIs. So the crew had already done the integration work with all the marketplaces. What was interesting is it became very apparent to me in that work, there's a lot of resistance to coming on to this off-the-shelf software,
right?
Because the guys had already built their own technology and software to meet the kind of new demands of the reality of the industry.
So this topic and David, you know, you and I know that we were talking about this, and it was kind of mind blowing for me, right? That I'd always had this vision of StubHub as being primarily a peer to peer, customer to customer kind of marketplace for individuals who would sell and buy tickets. But the idea that these ticket brokers, and you know, as a concert fan, as a sporting fan, there's other names for them, or in my history, where you know I picture that you're walking up to an event and there's someone on the corner yelling, "Hey, who you know who's selling tickets? Who's buying tickets?" But actually, the fact that the ticket brokering business had created this ecosystem where you've got these suppliers with such not only wide scale of distribution but also the high tech way that they're doing things is pretty amazing. So you're saying that they had all these, you know, custom-made systems that they had built that were their differentiating capabilities, and you were offering to them, "Hey, we've got an off-the-shelf solution." And there was resistance where they're saying, no, we have our own systems. We want to have the ecosystem relationship, but we want to keep using our systems." Is that kind of what happened?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that lends itself to kind of the power of APIs. I mean, you know, when we first started working with those, you know, large ticket brokers, we couldn't develop capabilities fast enough to meet their needs because they already had it. They had already been working with industry APIs, StubHub APIs, in fact, for years to create software that powered their businesses.
So I want to drill into this a little bit because
yeah.
It is also fascinating to me too. When I started to learn what you two were talking about earlier, so this is almost like arbitrage, right? It's like people are buying. You've got resellers that are buying bulk tickets or making deals early on to make sure that they're the ones distributing tickets, and they're placing bets and making decisions and all these other things along the way. What's StubHub and this kind of place is like is it's another two-sided market, but it's at all these different levels, right? Is that right? Is that kind of the idea I'm thinking of?
Yeah, I mean, there's a myriad of players involved. I mean, first of all, I mean, StubHub has one of the most robust consumer selling populations, so mm-hmm. fans selling to mm-hmm. other fans in the industry, and integrations like MLB facilitated that. We've also had partnerships with college sports as well as artists and theater companies, right? So You have that population. But yeah, the ticket brokers, like, they provide a really important service to the industry, especially to teams, right? So, I mean, they are taking big positions in teams, and, right, and they make their money a lot by buying low and selling high. But if you think about it from the team's perspective, they're providing liquidity to the industry, right? They're also providing distribution services and fulfillment services for those organizations. So they help the teams kind of stay lean operationally and shift the kind of the expertise to these sellers who kind of know where the demand is, when the demand is, you know, and they have the years of expertise on, like, you know, what to price, when to price, how to price, et cetera. They're really meeting the buyers kind of where they are.
Yeah, Matt, this is another example of what you always talk about in value exchange, right? A value network.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, from the naive outsider's perspective, you can look at something as what is seemingly simple as secondary market for tickets and see this complex ecosystem and see the different roles that are played and the value propositions that are in place. And I think it's just amazing. I think this is what the digital economy is doing. It's really unraveling and making visible for everyone what, you know, all the complexity of these ecosystems. So I think that it's maybe it's implied, but I think just for the listeners, because you've talked about the ticket brokers, you've talked about team relationships, league relationships, like, are APIs supporting all of those integration points with these partners? Like, how are APIs playing into that?
I mean, yes, they're supporting all of it, right? So, like, you know, consumers mostly list on StubHub generated software, but that's all powered by APIs. The ticket brokers use our kind of public domain APIs to basically power their operations. You know, they list tickets, they set prices, they, you know, take down inventory, they process sales and orders and fulfill all through APIs. Similarly, you know, the kind of the teams who are, or artists who are selling direct, you know, a lot of times those are, you know, really high touch integrations, but that's all powered by APIs as well.
Yeah. So I mean, at this point, now that I'm sort of getting my head around just what I imagine ticket brokering really was, and it's finding out it's really a much larger space. I mean, so there's, if you could just sort of briefly talk about the business model itself of StubHub, what were the primary, you know, drivers? I mean, what's going on just from the StubHub point of view, and how do APIs fit into that? How do APIs either create market or enable what markets and business models you already have?
Yeah, I mean, they're integral, guys. I mean, StubHub is primarily a transaction company. We handle tens of thousands of transactions per day. Just to give you a sense, over kind of $10 billion of inventory gets listed on StubHub throughout the year. You know, services like event catalog, the, you know, listing, price updates, order processing, transactional emails, that's all powered by API. So, like, you know, so the API is powered that transactional piece of things by enabling the suppliers. You know, and StubHub takes a two-sided marketplace, like you said, Mike. You know, we take a percentage of each transaction, whether it's from the seller or the buyer. Interestingly, you know, and this is where some of my experience came into play in some of the last 2 years that I worked at StubHub is, you know, we started to, the API team started to operate almost like an independent business unit, where we had this kind of service component to the market to make sure the market was operating efficiently. But we also started to think of ourselves as, hey, how do we bring new products and services to market to help these suppliers grow their businesses. And that kind of manifests itself out in bringing a few pay-to-play data as service products to market. One in particular is really interesting. It was a data as service product where we fed a stream of pricing data, event pricing data, to our customers, and they signed up for a subscription service to it. You know, they could sign up for, you know, we cut it kind of two ways. One was the number of events, and then the frequency at which they were calling the API. Wow. And they did really cool things like, you know, it led to like algorithm-based pricing,
right,
and auto pricing. So let me give an example. It's pretty interesting. So think about, you know, an injury update comes out, and your two favorite players are now on the injury report. You know, and you have a position in that team of, you know, thousands of tickets, right? So, you know, they could take that pricing update, or that, you know, that injury update, pull in the pricing data, see what their competitors were priced at, and adjust to meet the market where it is.
That's amazing. So, and when you say this was a data as a service product that was sold to the ticket brokers primarily,
but then, you know, teams are interested in that as well. You know, because you start to see, and I think the you know, some of the baseball teams are more progressive as it comes to this, but dynamic game day pricing is becoming more and more prolific. So, you know, we had some interest not only from ticket brokers, but from teams as well on something like that.
Wow. I'm just projecting that now into the concert space. It's like Axl Rose punches photography fluctuations. All right. I'm dating myself. So I'll date myself a little more though.
Yeah, please. Make me feel better.
You know, because Mike brought up this idea of value exchange, and this has been a focus area of ours as we're dissecting the APIs as a business area. And when we talk about value exchange, we're getting into, you know, not just, you know, in the kind of the industrial economy, you'd sell a product and you'd get money for it. Digital economy, we're seeing a lot more monetization of things beyond just products and services. You can data, you just gave an example of a data monetization. There's cases where if you're offering reach to a wide audience, which certainly this is part of the value proposition that you're describing for StubHub, that's value. Convenience is value, you know, selection. But an interesting area, and this is one that I debated a lot with my colleague Stephen Fishman, and you know, I was wrong, he was right, is the idea of trust being a form of value or security or risk reduction. And I wonder if, you know, if we have this stereotype of ticket brokering or aftermarket sales of tickets as being, you know, historically a dodgy space where you weren't sure to trust, you know, when I said I might date myself, I remember in 1989 driving to an hour to Toronto to camp out overnight to get Rolling Stones tickets and waiting and waiting and then being told that not, they're all sold out, you know, the phone orders came through and we can't get any more. Obviously, that was a different era, but you know, how much is trust factoring into the value proposition of StubHub?
I mean, it's paramount, right? Like you just highlighted, you know, something that I've experienced as well. It's a terrifying experience when you have a ticket and you're kind of holding your breath when you bring it to the door and have the person scan it, right? And that was what you did when your favorite band came to town and the show was sold out. You met someone on the street, you know, and think about like what StubHub has done, right? You know, people spend a couple hundred bucks on average on a transaction for a live event. And like, what do you get these days? It's almost like you get a receipt and a promise of access, you know. you know, and I'd say, I'd argue that that StubHub has done like such a good job at establishing like online ticket buying trust that it benefited the entire industry. I won't go out and say that we invented trust on online ticket buying, but pretty darn close. You know, I think synonymous with trust is that that inventory accuracy, Pete. It's kind of the heart of the matter. You know, I had an old boss that said, you know, the worst experience that StubHub could provide to a customer is, you know, getting rejected at the gate, right? So that's something that we try to avoid at all costs. So we kind of have systems and processes in place, both before to prevent and then after to pick the ball up on the first bounce if it does happen. It happens, but I mean, we're talking about, you know, less than 0.5% of the time. If you think about that across all the transactions, it's a pretty small instance level, right? You know, some of it is unintentional, right? So, you know, a seller types in the wrong section, row, or seat, and the buyer gets to their seat, and you know, it's not what they expected, right? Like that's one piece. But there's also kind of the fraud control component that you have to solve for, you know, and that happens as well, especially as you increase, you know, the transferability of tickets. So like the industry moved from hard stock, where, you know, you had to be pretty sophisticated to replicate a hard stock ticket. It moved to PDF where, I mean, anyone with a printer could become a fraudster. So, you know, you kind of have to develop these, you know, deep relationships with your suppliers and kind of define what it means to be a trusted seller. So you kind of set listing rules, you set selling rules, you set payment rules to you know, rein in all of the risk that's involved here. And all that is powered by, you know, APIs on StubHub. So, I mean, I think trust is paramount. Without trust, you don't have StubHub.
Yeah. And to kind of bring it back around to what you're talking earlier, you have to design, basically you're designing products. Now you're using API, sort of APIs to represent those products or be those products, whether it's the data exchange, the pricing management, or the, you know, this transferability. So I have to imagine, like any other, you know, product manager, products have life cycles, right? Like you have to do design and research and life cycle and management and maintenance and all these kind of things. What's that like in the ticket space like this? Like API products are like essential now to the way StubHub manages, right?
Yeah, I mean, and we manage them like any consumer or enterprise product that you're bringing to market. You know, StubHub follows the agile development methodology. You know, we have Scrum teams working in 2-week sprint cycles. We use Kanban boards to power like backlog grooming and sprint planning. We have developer outreach to source new API development opportunities, and we thematically analyze our support requests to flush out like optimization opportunities. There's SLAs involved with monitoring systems, and we have alerts and whatnot to alert the team, you know, when a problem occurs, and most likely and hopefully ahead of when a customer actually finds it. It's really a well-oiled machine there.
Yeah, fantastic. And you know, that life cycle of digital products, you're kind of alluding to some of the internal developer processes, but I think you know, we looked at the ecosystem from a high level. Mm-hmm. Given that those APIs are products, you know, obviously the direct users of the APIs are developers. So I guess those ticket brokers have developers, the leagues and teams have developers. You know, do you find that it's in terms of those developer communities and catering to those developer communities, did you find that you had different processes to work with those different personas or different organizations, or was it more of a general approach to developer community management?
Yeah, I mean, so first of all, like, having the robust developer community and powering that by APIs, like, that opens up the possibility of kind of more expansive offerings that benefit the market, right? I think I said earlier, like, you know, when we were talking about the POS point of sale system, mm-hmm. we internally couldn't develop features and functionality fast enough for our seller community or our buyer community, right? So having mm-hmm. this ecosystem externalizes that development and opens up the opportunity for, you know, some of these developers to provide value and build value for themselves by doing it. Mm-hmm. So I'm a real believer in an ecosystem kind of product development system. Yeah. But as far as like working with the various communities, I like to think about this a little bit historically. We started with kind of very intentional StubHub, that is, intentional integrations, MLB being one of the first. And I think the demand grew organically because they saw the value of those types of integrations. So I think what happened was over the years, the APIs proliferated. We were trying to keep up with the demand in providing these APIs, as a result, we kind of became a service oriented API organization where we kind of lost our ability to technical account manage or collaborative development opportunities with our ecosystem.
So in other words, what you're describing actually, on our last episode, we had Lou Powell on, who's been working with a lot of companies on API strategy. He came up with this framework he calls API IQ. It's like mm-hmm. an interface quotient. And he's talking about different quadrants of, types of integrations that you do and putting the internal stuff aside. He had two axes, but one of them was about, how many users you have. It sounds like you went from this MLB case where you had more time to do collaborative development around what they needed, but then over time, as you had more and more consumers coming on board, you had to just focus on the product kind of from a multicast perspective where you had to just collect requirements, best information you had, put it out in the API products and make them kind of serve the whole community.
Yeah, I mean, so I think what we ended up having to do was kind of, since we had all the developers really in our ecosystem and we had a lot of the use cases that were common across all of the developers, we had to create a more formal customer segmentation model to be able to service the existing developer community, but also set this community up for growth looking forward. And so when we looked at the community and the use cases, we kind of boiled the ocean, for lack of a better word, down to four different types of customers, which we've touched on in this conversation, but right. Content rights holders, professional ticket brokers, software service providers, and affiliates. And then we looked at the kind of the common use cases around that and started to kind of bucket those into product offerings and volume tiers and whatnot. And it really helped us kind of target both our service to the people who need it the most, but also target and allow us to kind of get out ahead of our developer community to some degree, and actually like put in a account management structure.
Yeah. Yeah, I think one of the things that again is really hitting me here is you kind of went through this this period where, as Matt was saying, you sort of created these segments, you sort of established sort of the ecosystem in a different kind of way. So that must have been really fascinating to kind of see that growth, see that maturity, see that sort of emerging almost set of markets or segments of markets. And that must have been a real challenge just from sort of just managing, not just products, but managing the way software is put together, the way you define all of your products and delivery points. I mean, this is a challenge that probably a lot of people are going to see. Their ecosystem's going to change. What kind of advice would you give to organizations that are going to undergo this kind of, we need to sort of segment our space kind of experience that you've had?
Yeah, I mean, use the data that you have, right? Like that was really the aha moment for me, is when I actually saw the behavior patterns of the existing developer community. Because I mean, the developer community kind of moves faster than we can move, right? So, and you gotta, using that data, we were able to get insight into, you know, how this ecosystem was behaving, and then kind of realigned our organization to meet reality, right? Because that at some point had gotten a little bit out of whack. So, I mean, I think, you know, leading with data and behavior would be my advice, and something that was paramount to the success of rebooting StubHub's API program.
Very good. Yeah.
Just to go back a bit further in time, I mean, I have to say, the there's a wealth of knowledge that you just provided around the whole functioning of the ecosystem, and you know, even though you're providing real unique domain knowledge of the event and ticketing space and that whole marketplace, like there's so many parallels that this could be applied in any sort of, well, in any, I would say, external API program, in any, especially in any sort of two-sided marketplace pattern. And we're starting to see that. That's one thing Mike and I are spending a lot of time on, is identifying what are these different business model patterns. And this is definitely a very big one. And I think in any industry, a real growth opportunity. But for you personally, like, you know, this is, you're relaying a lot of the experience you had working at StubHub. But just to go back in time a bit, like prior to StubHub, you were focused, it really was on workplace solutions, goals management, employee engagement and inclusion, and so on. You know, did that experience inform some of your work in the API marketplace space as well?
It did. HR tech, you work with a lot of HR leaders, and you have to be very consultative in the HR space. And that really came in handy when, you know, I led the reboot of our API program, because, a lot of the times the developers are coming in asking specifically about this API or that API. And so having that consultative background really helped me kind of slow the conversation down, understand kind of what these companies were trying to accomplish, and then work from there to get to solutioning and matching, which APIs would be best for that particular use case. So that was, you know, one thing that was really helpful from my work in the HR tech space. Additionally, the goal management piece. So I had I worked for a company where we had a basically Nagware, for lack of a better word, where, you know, people would use our technology to follow up on the goals that they set as part of, you know, a business planning process or a learning and development course that they took. And what I really gained from that was, the the check-in, the process, the aligning support when it's needed. You know, that came in handy when, you know, we were looking to onboard customers onto our new API management platform. And then, you know, employee engagement, I have some experience there as well. I think systems thinking is what I really gain from that experience. You know, if you think about employee engagement, an individual may or may not be engaged, but it's really, you know, various factors in the environment that are impacting, you know, their engagement in some way. And that became corollary, especially in a marketplace scenario where, you know, if you pull a lever here, you know, you have an unintended effect on somewhere else in the marketplace. So having that systems thinking, you know, especially when we were launching our data as service product, I had to think through, you know, what was the impact to our developers' businesses or even and our sellers' businesses by launching a subscription service type product? Like, you know, what might need to give somewhere else, or where might we need to make concessions when we start to bring these developers and sellers onto a product like that?
Excellent.
So I think, like, unquestionably, this is, and by the way, you had me at systems thinking there.
Right. I kind of knew your hot buttons, I think. Yeah, coming in, so I was,
get me going on systems thinking. That's a whole other episode. That's I love that aspect of it. Like, I especially love that part where you talk about what's going to have to give, like what's going to change when I start to nudge the system. Mm-hmm. What are my pluses and minuses? But again, that's a whole nother episode. We could talk some more, but I love that that's part of the picture.
Well, but I mean, let me just give you a quick example of kind of where that did play out, right? It's like, you know, having that subscription service that was a kind of a pay to play type model. I mean, as a business, you want to keep your fixed costs down, right? So, yeah. You know, one of the relationships we entered into is, you know, one of the ticket brokers didn't want to pay for the data service or was trying to get a deal on the data service. So, you know, these guys are also on the other side of the marketplace where they're getting transaction fees on sales that they made. So we actually made a win-win deal where we got exclusive supply for a high profile event in exchange for access to the data. So like, you know, that systems thinking comes into play and you know, that to me was a win for everyone.
Yeah. I think and Mike and I have actually been talking about, I've been talking a lot lately about, if you think about digital ecosystems and, you know, you don't want to only contribute to the health of your business model,
right.
But if you're an ecosystem player, you have to make the ecosystem thrive, not be an invasive species who wipes.
Exactly.
Out.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that, yeah, no. And I think what you just described there, aligning with incentives, definitely systems thinking all the way. So, you know, we could definitely talk longer, but you've already given a tremendous wealth of information to the listeners. I think for a lot of companies we're working with are really transitioning from more closed ecosystems to more open ecosystems in the digital space. And I think that the experience that you just relayed is extremely valuable. So I know they've gotten a lot out of that. But, you know, if we have listeners who want to get more, I think they can contact you on LinkedIn, social media. It's David Timby. I think it's linkedin.com/in/DavidTimby, TIMBY. We'll definitely include the links when we post on the blog, but I just want to say a huge thanks, David. I've learned a lot, you know, just we from our previous discussion and certainly on this discussion.
Yeah.
Matt, Mike, I mean, this was a blast. I appreciate the opportunity and, you know, thanks for your time and appreciate the listeners as well.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Mike. Thanks, David. And thanks, everyone, for listening. We look forward to talking with you next time. But until now, hope you enjoyed APIs Unplugged.